It's never been my goal to go so hard that I wreck myself. I want long-term health, you know, so making the games, it was not at all expense. You know, it wasn't, I'm gonna do this no matter what. And I think just being wise about that, I think is a lesson, you know, that you need to take seriously recovery and be wise with movement and not jump your volume up so much that it's so radically different from what you've been accustomed to that your joints start to get wrecked and then you just set yourself back.
Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Soar Fitness. Soar Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver training content to coaches and athletes like you. The site has educational resources on everything from program design and exercise physiology to skill progressions and movement breakdowns. And in terms of programming, we have our online training program, The Protocol, and I also offer one-on-one remote coaching. It's all at one place, soarfitness.com. Today, I have the honor and privilege of speaking with Mr. Kenneth Sherdell, who is a Masters CrossFit Games competitor. He competed in the 65-plus division this year, and that's one of the main things that we're going to be talking about. But anyone who knows Ken can just say how much of a just genuine, good person he is and how he helps the people that he coaches. He's also a CrossFit coach in addition to being an athlete. He's actually an entrepreneur. He is a professional carpenter and a furniture maker, which we talk about. He was a former chaplain and actually went to seminary. And I found about this after the podcast, but he was actually a former behaviorist and trainer at SeaWorld. It's really cool. You got to go check out the YouTube video. He actually has a picture with him and all the other trainers, him swimming with a killer whale, him on the calendar at SeaWorld. There's a lot of cool stuff that this guy's done in his life. And he is a super humble about it and actually doesn't talk about it much on the podcast, but I want to make sure that we give him the recognition that he deserves. And in the past, I've worked one-on-one with Ken in a remote coaching aspect. And as some of his life priorities and circumstances have shifted, we've stayed in contact. So it was really cool to see him at the level of success that he did in this year's CrossFit Games season. Today, we talk about Ken's training history and his athletic background and ultimately how he found CrossFit and how it largely actually changed his life. Then we talk about his first impressions of the CrossFit Games from the perspective of an athlete who is qualified. We talk about his training and build up to the actual big event itself. And then we walk through the Masters CrossFit Games events and his experience of those events and how they went for him individually one by one. And then we finish off by Ken giving some of his advice to older Masters athletes on how to stay healthy while training hard. And after our conversation, Ken actually followed up with me with some additional thoughts about the final question that I asked him, and this is what he had to say. When it comes to our physicality, one thing I might say is that as we age, it is important to accept the reality of limitations. They are evident on the field, in the gym, and in the mirror. Yet we may not be as constricted as we tend to resign ourselves. 30 years ago, as a young father, my son asked me if I had ever been able to run. All he had known was a dad who, for years, had been debilitated by chronic back pain. A couple of weeks ago, this same son accompanied his 65-year-old father to the CrossFit Games. Consistency in training, faith, willingness to venture into discomfort, sleep, sound nutrition, humility to heed the wisdom of others, healthy relationships, purposeful action, and patience can be a recipe for surprises. And then Ken also sent me some additional thoughts. In terms of motivation, find a new movement, or three, to progressively work on. Get specific. Have high goals displayed, so to speak, on the horizon, but then make it about the work in the present. Make a plan and trust the process. Use the clock. Example, working on your double under consistency, EMOM for 10 minutes, 5 reps unbroken in minute 1, 10 in minute 2, 15 in minute 3, and so on. You must complete each increase unbroken before moving up. Limit to 10 minutes as part of your warm-up or at the end of a session. Tomorrow, repeat. You end up both honoring your skills and building work capacity. This can be applied in many ways and with combinations of movements. Without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Ken Sherdell.
I'm in my wood shop, and that's been my profession, my main profession, along with coaching. So furniture making and design. So I get a lot of wood and clamps and all of that behind me.
Yeah. So it's actually a pretty sweet backdrop for a podcast, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I like it too.
Yeah. I mean, it shows off all, that's a lot of work right there.
Yeah. There's a lot of different species of wood behind me and a lot of work looking at me when I look in the screen.
So that's good. Did you have a favorite piece of furniture or thing to make or that you have made?
That's a great question. I have really never thought of that. Because I've made everything from a fancy cat house to a $15,000 dining tables, you know, so
wow.
And everything in between. So do hardwood furniture of all kinds. And I had a great mentor that I spent 7 years with, working with him in Rhode Island. I'm in Tennessee now. And all kind of from tables, chairs, benches, freestanding cabinets, some office furniture, anything you can imagine in many different species of wood. So mostly one piece at a time, commissioned pieces one at a time.
Yeah. That's really cool. It's definitely a unique skill set to have. So how did you end up finding CrossFit, and what age were you at that point?
I love that question. I was in, fitness has always been a part of my life, but I got to my mid 50s and I was running and I was going to the gym, doing, to machines and all of that and things I had done for pretty much a lifetime. And, but I wasn't feeling great. And I was, my work was more sedentary. I moved into a job where I was working as a chaplain for a businessman, and I had a lot of travel. I had a lot of meals out and that sort of thing. And So my life became a lot more sedentary than it had been. Woodworking has always been a part of things, but that was a shift for a few years, and I wasn't feeling that great energy wise. So I was doing the running, I was doing the gym, but I checked out a CrossFit gym local. I didn't know, hardly knew anything about it in my mind. It was like circuit training or something. I really didn't know anything about it. Got a great greeting by the owner of the gym that one day. And in one day I knew I needed to do this. It just fueled the fires for just learning new things. And also for, that old fire of competition and that sort of thing. So it was inspiring to me and a change, which helped.
Yeah. I mean, at least this was my experience. And I feel like it's been the experience of a lot of people who are kind of doing things a little bit more segmented before. It was like, you might be doing strength training, but it wasn't mixed with conditioning at the same time. Or, that the idea of being able to like mash all those things together was sort of unique. I mean, that's basically what CrossFit did. But like for a lot of people, it was taking things that they were already fairly good at on their own. Not that they're good at double unders and snatches and everything else, but like, you could squat, you could do some of the basic movements, you had decent conditioning, and then it was like mixing them all together. Is that kind of what attracted you to it?
Yeah, I did love the mix. Also was attractive was walking into the gym and the programming's done. It's like, just tell me what to do. I wasn't walking in, okay, what am I working today? And still, I grew up in, it was all about bodybuilding. I mean, that's what you did. I mean, strength and conditioning field, but also it was like, yes, you didn't have that mix and necessarily in the way that CrossFit mixes things.
Right.
And I found it greatly beneficial to my health, frankly. And I felt a lot better. And besides, I was always learning something new, and that was encouraging too. You mentioned some of the skills that you don't really learn when you're doing the, just going to the gym and guessing what you're going to do that day.
Yeah. It is just so nice just to have something laid out for you, whether you're an affiliate or having a coach. I mean, that's so nice just to be able to, can at least shut off that part of your brain. It's helpful. a lot of
times.
That's
right. Just put me to work.
So, yeah, man, you made it to the games. That's pretty cool. It was not the typical like buildup that people would expect, like where you're staring at the leaderboard and you keep refreshing it, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, whenever the window closes and you start like cheering. Like, I feel like actually there's not a whole lot of people that have that experience where either they're good enough where they expected to make it through already, if they're like the top three, for example. Or you're the people who are somewhere between, you know, 7 and 13, and you're like, well, we'll see how the leaderboard shakes out after all the changes go into place, and you still don't really know. So it's, you're kind of stuck there. So take us through from where we at when things closed out and how it be that you end up, you know, actually qualifying.
So when closed out at the Open or the quarterfinals?
So let's just go straight to semifinals.
Okay. The jumps were, well, it was uncertain whether I was going to make the semis. And if you remember, we were in communication about that time, and I was somewhere around 35 and the cut line was 30.
Yeah.
So we crept up, I guess, as videos were reviewed and everything, then qualified at the 30. I mean, at 29. So just crept over the line.
Oh man, I forgot about that. Yeah. So you were not just close qualifying for the games. I mean, it was really, I mean, frankly, a bit of a stretch to get to the semifinal, and that was really the goal. So
right.
Yeah, I mean, continue. That was great.
Yeah. Came out of the Open at 46. And so well within the cut line there for the 200,
right.
Then 29th, to make the semis. And that seemed like, boy, that's going to be a jump. I got to make up a lot of space here, 20 places or something,
yeah.
Like 21 places, right, to make the cut line for the game. So it seemed so unlikely, but at the same time, it was like, okay, I'm either going to be all in on this or I'm not. And I didn't want to go halfway, you know. So with my wife's agreement, you know, because, you know, that just takes some extra time and some extra dedication in the gym, extra focus, and also guidance from folks like yourself and others, I was able to focus and spend more time. And then, frankly, from semifinals to the games, it became a part-time job to work out. So I like to say my wife works and I work out, you know?
so did it feel like, you say it felt like a part-time job in the sense that it took a lot of time. Did it also feel like a job in the very little sense of like having to do it almost and like feeling that obligation to go train?
No, it was, that's more, okay, you're determined to go, you're determined to get after it. And then, no, it's just a matter of figuring out day to day, really how, where I'm going to put that time in. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it felt like, am I doing enough? You know,
yeah.
There was always that question, am I doing enough? So some of the training days ended up being, you know, four and a half, five, even 6 hours when you accumulate it.
Yeah.
And then, but then also I needed to build, you know, as an older athlete, you really have to build in the rest and the recovery, and you have to have faith that that's going to be beneficial in the end.
Yeah. Well, also at the same time, balancing of the rest, but also making sure everything's staying healthy, like in terms of like making sure the body's holding up, not just like, you know, there's one thing of like the fatigue of just training hard and needing some time or more time to kind of rebuild from that. But it's like another thing to make sure you're not having a, not even necessarily a catastrophic injury, but like stuff that's more like, you know, just kind of overuse base almost, right? Like just if you end up doing so much squatting reps, plus trying to build your run volume, plus trying to do this and this and like all the other things that could come out, plus, you know, all of a sudden becomes a lot. How did you feel like you navigated that?
Yeah. When we first realized that we would be training, And when I say we, I mean, because I had a team around me. I mean, you had some input. I have the coaches at the gym who I trust. And then our first goal was to arrive healthy.
Yeah.
And I felt like that would be an advantage because I've been in that place where I've not been put in too much. And then the joints are feeling, it's never been my goal to go so hard that I wreck myself. And I want long-term health, you know, so making the games, it was not at all expense. You know, it wasn't, I'm going to do this no matter what.
Right.
But it did take the commitment. And I think just being wise about that, I think is a lesson, you know, that you need to take seriously recovery, as you know, and be wise with movement and not jump your volume up so much that it's so radically different from what you've been accustomed to, that your joints start to get wrecked and then you just set yourself back.
Yeah. So I'm just imagining you're at your home gym or the gym that you normally work out at, and you're putting in all these extra training hours. It's like this big build up to the games, and you go to Madison, you know, you arrive there and you kind of walk into the venue or to the briefing area and all that different stuff. Like, what was the experience from like a big picture, take a step back, like what was going through your head in those first couple experiences?
Consciously trying not to walk in like a deer in the headlights. I had some peace with the process, you know, to make the jumps that I had were, really felt unlikely to do. And so, you know, I'm one who believes that God's in the process. So, you know, that of me. And I was just trusting that, you know, I'm here for a purpose. I'm not sure what that purpose is exactly. And, having some confidence in that, the games environment was very cool to walk into. It's incredible what they put together. I mean, people can criticize particulars, but the logistics of that thing is just, it's astounding, the work that has to go into that. And you look in the warehouses, for example, and where they store all the equipment, like Rogue wheels there. I don't know how long it takes them to get the gear in there, but that's just the stuff that's sitting in the warehouse, never mind what needs to get moved on to the field and pushed out and pulled back, you know? So the environment itself is huge. They really treated the athletes well. The system to get you in there, Noble did a great job just having, I mean, it was a real treat getting the gear from Noble, the shirts and shorts and other gear, shoes, obviously. So that's very cool. But the way they did it with lockers, you walk into a locker like you're walking into your NFL locker. And this whole setup was just treat the athletes well, get them ready, and we'll go.
Yeah, that was probably my biggest thing that I think I didn't appreciate before I attended was like just understanding the number of bodies that were necessary from like, mm-hmm. Just like the number of athletes that were there. Like, you know, before it was 20 athletes for all the age groupers, you know, this year they cut in half, but before it was 20 for each division, you know, from the teens all the way up to the 65 plus, and then all the individual athletes, and each of those people get a coach. And there's a lot of people just in that area. Then all the volunteers and all the games people. And then you put all the fans on top of it. It was just so many people. And then the amount of equipment that they needed. Each event is in a different venue. Only so many people know what the event is. I mean, I was boggled by the logistics of an event like that, because I hadn't really thought about it in that level of detail before. When you're up front in person like that and you really see everything that goes on, it's, to me, it was mind boggling.
It is. If you have ever experienced trying to run an event at your own gym, that's minuscule compared to what has to happen at this event.
So yeah, that's a great example. Sweet. So let's walk through the events. I mean, we'll kind of come back and get some other big picture stuff. Well, one thing I do want to kind of touch on before we dive into these one by one is you had a little hiccup, so to speak, the week before the games. You want to explain to us what that was and how it sort of impacted you, you know, physically, but also mentally over the course of the lead up and into the games and through the games?
Little hiccup. Yeah, I'm picturing myself laying on the ground with my leg up on a box and bleeding through my fingers. I was doing some box jumps just started to speed them up. And it was part of my warm-up, actually. I slipped on the box and split my shin. So I got 9 stitches in my shin. And this is 2 days before I'm to leave for the games. So I was a little bit frustrated by that, you might say, but concerned, obviously, because yeah. I didn't know how bad it was. Thankfully, we have a therapist, physical therapist, actually in-house, and two of them. And they came down and I was able to hail them. It was funny because one came out and he says, how you doing, Ken? I said, I need some first aid. And he kind of laughs at it. He goes, oh. And I said, no, really, I need some first aid. So they came down and you need to get to urgent care and get that stitched up, I think. So that's where I ended up a couple days before.
Yeah. How did that impact like bounding movements, barbell cycling, some things like that?
Yeah, I was concerned about that because of the flex and extension
there's a lot of muscles.
Yeah, even something like double unders and right. all that. But thankfully I had several days before I had to really go on the field. You know, you are limited in what you can do in terms of just staying prepared. But it really was not too much of an issue there in terms of how it impacted me. I just made sure it was covered up. And it did seem infected. And so while I was there running up to, okay, my events are going to start tomorrow or 2 days from now, leg was swelling and things like that. And so I had to go for some antibiotics and had some concern about how that might affect my performance. And so apparently it did a little bit, but anyway, my leg's good right now. Stitches are out and I'm recovering pretty well.
Healing up.
Yeah.
Sweet, man. Let's walk through the events one by one. I got them here. So the very first event, 3 ways down for time with a 30-minute cap, 400 meter or 1400 meter run, 4 rope climbs, 21 dumbbell shoulder overhead. For you, it was 50 a hand. And then 1200 meter run, 3 rope climbs, 15 dumbbells, 800 meter run, 2 rope climbs, 9 dumbbell shoulder overhead.
Right.
Want to walk us through how that one go?
Yeah, sure. That actually for us ended up the second event that we had event 2 we started with.
Really?
Yeah. So if you want to look at that first or.
I did not realize that. Mm-hmm. So did any division do that first?
Some of us in the age groups did. I'm not sure if every age group did.
Okay. There was a few where the live stream was in a really odd order in terms of when the divisions went. And some of them, the 65 plus were like, the live stream didn't even start until you were, you know, finished with the event. So that's really interesting. So they actually put the max lift first.
Right.
Which that would have been the first they've ever did that. I don't think that was probably, I mean, maybe it was intentional for your age group or just like logistically how they had to do it, but that's definitely interesting.
Yeah. I suspect it might've had something to do with the weather. Cause there's storms that came through. And so they had to do some shifting in the schedule. And so I'm not sure how that affected it.
And the other one was in the Coliseum. So that kind of makes sense that they could move you in there and maybe just do that one first.
Right. So, Which one do you want to cover first?
Yeah, so let's go to the first one. That was actually event two. So this one's called Max Trio, 5 minute max bike cals, 1 RM weighted pull up, 1 RM front squat. So you had 5 minutes on the bike, 3 minutes for the pull up, 3 minutes for the front squat. So the strength ones are really short time frames.
Yeah. Right.
Walk us through.
Okay. Starting with the bike was interesting for me because I didn't have a lot of experience on the bike erg. Thankfully, I did have somebody at the gym who had one. So I at least was able to sit on it and get a sense of what settings I needed.
Yep.
And get a little bit of a sense of what it took, you know, in terms of damper setting and calories per hour and that sort of thing. But I wasn't hugely familiar with it. So that one, starting there, I think that going after it again, I could have gone harder, but I was also watching, you know, lactic acid build up in my legs and feeling that, and trying to keep a good, strong pace throughout rather than total my legs right in the beginning. You know, strategy wise, I'm not sure if that was the best strategy or not, because we did have the rest, if you will, of the pull up to follow.
Yeah, but even still, like 3 minutes, if you really trash your legs on a bike, and by the time you get to that front squat, 3 minutes later, it's really pretty insignificant. Yeah. So, no, I think that, I mean, and I would say it's probably wise to not treat that one as a complete blackout. So, weighted pull up, what kind of grip did you use for that?
I used an overhand grip and a pronated grip, but I, and mostly because I was concerned about full extension and, you know, cause that's going to get called, being able to hit full extension at the bottom. And I had some inside elbow issues a little bit. And so that hurts my elbows a little more,
right?
Than overhand grip. And so I was being careful about that. Also had confidence in my weight. I think that I can't remember exactly what I hit, 75 or something like that. But I, after doing that, we had 3 minutes. So you get off the bike, you have 3 minutes to get your weight. And then
do you remember about what your attempts were?
My attempts were 60, I think, and maybe 65 and 75 or something like that.
That's so impressive.
Well,
65-year-olds can't even hang from a bar, let alone do a strict pull-up.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. I that was one where you look back and you think, wow, I could have done more. I felt strong on that one.
Yeah.
I was frustrated because I'm trying to play around with getting the chain through the plates.
Right.
And so that wasted my time. And I was trying not to get too frustrated by it. But, you know, that's all part of the game.
Yep.
And finally got it hooked up. And I probably could have hit more. I mean, but, you know, live and learn. It was one of those things. And then we moved on to the front squat from there. I started off just 5 pounds heavier than I had in the warm-up area. I think I started at 210. Then jumped to 220, I believe. And then took a significant jump to 240. That's probably too much. Well, it was too much because I didn't make it. But, you know, I guess it's all right for us old guys.
Anyway. I mean, man, but that's kind of what you have to do. And you literally have a 3 minute window to lift. It's like you kind of have to make a guess and make some pretty aggressive jumps and hope for the best. And
that's right.
I mean, there's only, again, that's such a tight window that it's the margin for error there is so small. So, but I guess everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah, everybody's got their stories, that's for sure.
Cool. And you ended up fourth on that one with 386 points. So, yeah.
I don't even know, Ben. I've not even looked at the leaderboard in these things. So, I really, my coach with me was saying, hey, do you want to know where you stand?
Yeah.
And I said, no, not till the end of the day.
Right.
So, that's kind of how we held it even through the end of the week.
Yeah. Sweet. So let's backtrack now to the event that you did second, which is the three ways down one, the run with running, rope climbs, and dumbbell shoulder to overhead. Mm-hmm. So this is a long one. If I'm not mistaken, this is when you had some quad cramping.
Yes. Yeah, so this was an interesting one right from the start, because the shoes, a shoes decision was kind of critical for that one. We tested out some shoes on the rope, and I was not comfortable with them. So I went to the regular running shoes, which are really the Noble running shoes, which are very comfortable to run in, and tried the rope, tested it out on the rope. You know, the soles aren't meant to really hold up to a lot of rope climbs,
yeah.
But it seemed like it would work. So I did run in those, and yeah, it was for 1400 meters. Is that what it says? The first run. So 1400, and I came into this, I kept the guys in front of me in sight. I felt like they went out too hot. And so I was just keeping pace, butting back, and figured I'd creep up as we went. But as I came down the hill into the stadium, my quads seized up on the inside of my quads. I'd never experienced this before in ways that I didn't even know if I could step up onto the mat to get onto the rope for the rope climbs. I mean,
like legs didn't want to bend. They were just cramping that hard.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it was just, I'm pounding on them and I'm trying to, you know, do whatever, it was kind of fruitless, but yeah. So then there was a challenge. Okay. Get up the rope and then get out onto the field and do the push press or push jerk or whatever my choice was. The ground, obviously the turf is soft, and then you get the soft shoes and add that to
squishy.
You have no legs anymore. And so that was a challenge to get through those guys. Got out on the second run somehow, and I kind of jogged that one to try to just get loose. Came back onto the field with the same condition and just kind of worked through it as much as I could. You know, I knew I wasn't going to finish at that point because it was just, it was discouraging, because I felt great on the run up until the last, like, downhill. So it felt good. Felt like I was holding a good pace, and then I was going to be in the good mix there in terms of, just in terms of leading.
Yeah. Normally that should be a good event for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we don't know for sure, but the antibiotics might have had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Or who knows, you know, combination of factors. You got the heat, you got the electrolyte depletion or something like that. So, and we did that squat event beforehand, but everybody had done that. So.
Right. It's so hard to know, because it's like, man, you were traveling, you know, you're on some new medication. You have new shoes. Like, man, it's hot. Like, there's so many factors to figure it out. Maybe it was just the right combination of all of them, or maybe the wrong combination of all of them.
Coming out of that, I did end up in the ice bath. I'd never had that before, and so that was great. That was good. But then I ended up on the floor, and Ariosti was there, and they're. They did some soft tissue work on me, and then we managed to get over to another part of the venue, and they worked on me again. And so really I had some question as to whether I'd be able to go the next day, because we had squat cleans coming.
Yeah. I mean, did you get DOMS from that, the cramping?
It lasted until yesterday.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. So today's the 16th. So it's been a little bit, and you're still hurting from it. I mean, I would imagine there's people listening that really haven't had a cramp like that, where it's like truly like a tonic cramp, where it's like extremely painful, but like not even just painful. Like, you literally can't move the joint, because it's just, you know, you can see like the muscle rippling, and those are not fun at all.
I've had plenty of those. My whole leg ended up cramping all the way down to my foot and then my sole of my feet. So yeah, it's crazy.
I had one of those. I was riding my bike one time, and I don't know if it was just dehydration, what exactly is causing the cramping. But anyway, I had both my quads completely lock up, and I was clipped into my bike, and I just fell into off the road into a field because I couldn't. You can't even bend your legs. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. All part of the adventure, though, right?
That's right. All right. So event three was the skill chipper for time with a 7 minute cap. Pegboards, one pegboard, first time for masters athletes or teens. 50 double unders, 25 for you. It was 20 handstand pushups and 30 double unders. 30 more double unders, 20 pistols. Once again, 30 double unders, 20 GHD, 30 double under, and then a handstand walk as far as you get through that chipper. What were sort of like your thoughts and how like aggressive you wanted to be? How conservative did you want to be? Where'd you think you'd be at sort of in this one? Because obviously, as the name suggests, it's way more like skill, mobility, you know, based.
Yeah, if you can remind me what we started with the pegboard, but as we go, remind me what the next
event. Pegboard and then double unders.
Double unders. Yeah, pegboard I'd never done ever. And so that was, but I was looking forward to it. You know, I'm pretty good on the bar. And so I thought, well, we'll see. You know, I just had to decide whether I'm going to skip some holes or, you know, just creep up a one at a time. Right. So I decided to be conservative and just creep up the up. And that worked out, able to get that done. And
how, down. How many people in your division did it?
That's a good question. I don't know. There were a couple guys who just couldn't do it.
Just stood there and looked at it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you did a strict pull up with 75 pounds. I mean, you got the strength surplus to do a pegboard.
It helps. It helps for sure. It's a little bit intimidating. You know, you go going up. And then you got to come down. And so can you find your way down in a reasonable fashion without falling off the thing?
Right. And it's not like like a rope climb where like, yes, you're letting go, but it's like you just have your hand to grab back on, where this is like you're trying to fit up literally a peg in a hole. So it's like it's definitely a different feeling if you're not comfortable with that and haven't had that exposure, which you hadn't. So.
Yeah, pasting yourself to the wall as much as you're gluing yourself with those 3 points of contact as much as you can. That was interesting. Helps to have the right shoes or have shoes that, you know, your toes can actually grip that plexiglass or whatever we're climbing. Yeah, so that was fun. And the next one was double unders. I'm good with double unders. Didn't seem to have an issue with that, only with the count. I thought I was done and I wasn't done. I mean, the hand signal I thought meant I was done.
They were putting it up for five maybe or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know how it is. It's hard to count double unders in that.
Oh yeah.
I was just, so I stopped and then I found out I had more to go, but that was, that was that.
And then on to handstand pushups.
Handstand pushups. You know me, Ben, and those are my bane. And also I've had some shoulder issues. So working through that, that's kind of not been something I've spent a lot of time on my hands, but more static holds and more moving around, working on handstand walk and that sort of thing. But the push-ups have been difficult to work on. I have been working on the strength stuff, but just getting through some shoulder work, frankly, in the semifinals, I think it was, I did them better than I expected that I would do. But mostly because of continuing therapy and not because I'd been able to work on them a whole lot.
Yeah. So not just beating them to death. Yeah.
Yeah. So coming into the games, it was a similar kind of thing. I didn't really expect to be able to knock a ton of them out. And that proved to be the case. So I know, you know, all these things that we realize are our weaknesses, they do get highlighted in competition. And, are you going to work on them or are you not? You know, sometimes there's a physiological reason to, you know, to not. And other times it's just up here. I don't feel like working on it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I mean, there is a balance to be, especially going into the games, I feel like, of the way the scoring system is and just the, you know, it's 10, not hundreds of thousands. So it makes more sense to start to to weigh whether, you know, you're actually adapting well to training your weaknesses or just work on the stuff that you're good at, which is a whole another thing we could get into. All right, event four, parallel Elizabeth, four time, 21:59, squat cleans for you, 85 pounds, and then 5-3-1 of a parallel bar traverse. So basically you're walking, I don't know if it was 10-ish feet across a pair, set of parallel bars.
Yeah, I think that was 115, is that right? Is that right?
Oh yeah, sorry, I was looking at the female weight. Yep, the game's rising backwards.
Yeah, and so that was the one I was really concerned about for the legs, and definitely the previous day had an effect on that, the cramping and everything. It did slow me down some. The parallel bars were seemed to breeze through those okay, and so that was my point to catch up. Where I got caught in that one was thinking I had more time than I did. So I got capped because I thought that, you know, I was on the set of nine and I thought I had more time to get those and there was no clock in sight. And
that's the thing, the clock is way over there in the corner when you're on the floor and it's hard to see where it's at. And if you're focused on what you're doing and they always want you faced a certain way, oftentimes your back is to the clock and it's way over there in the corner. Someone else might be in the way. There's a lot of stuff. There's noise, you know? Yeah. It's, that seems like a rookie error, but really, I mean, it's challenging when you're on the floor like that.
Yeah. Walking out onto the floor, I would try to look for the clock, but it wasn't obvious since I don't remember if I asked my judge where it is. I do remember asking a judge at some point where the clock. But yeah, I got capped on that. And if I had known, just in terms of, I just would have tried to bust it as many out as possible. I was trying to pace myself to get the nine and I should have just got off as soon as got right on the bar and hit them and died right there. So, but you know, that, again, these are lessons you learn in the competition and I can learn to be a better racer, you know, basically. So that's a lesson I learned.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you have a first experience, I mean, you're going to learn so much from it. Mixed mode madness. So this was an interval style one where each of these windows had a 3-minute cap. So it was ring muscle ups into an obstacle course sprint, snatches into an obstacle course sprint, and row cows into an obstacle course sprint with a kind of rest and reset in between each of those. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a big picture. Like, what did you think of the event?
Oh, I loved it. I thought that everything was, I had no complaints about the programming. I mean, I don't have a right to complain about it, frankly, but I thought they did a great job with all of them. And also making some adjustments for age groups and everything. I think it was quality work.
You thought like the scales for your age division were appropriate?
I do. Yep, I do.
I mean, they always try to push the envelope on certain things, right? Like before they didn't have like the older divisions do muscle ups, or maybe it wasn't until like the last round of the workout where they'd have you do chest bar. And then by the time you got to the end of the workout, it was muscle ups. And now it's the 65 plusers. First thing you're doing is ring muscle ups with like the world's longest straps in the wind.
Right.
So how did those go? I mean, I watched that one. It was like, oh my gosh, it was really windy out there and those straps were really long. Like they were probably 15-foot straps. So the rings are just going all over the place. Some of the guys didn't use blocks where they're having to jump to like try to get them there. You're smart and used a crash pad under your feet so that you could actually reach the rings when you're on the, the pad, which was a great move.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of critical for me because I'm better at false grip than I am, not the false grip or overhand grip. And just in terms of cycling, although it does take a little bit out of you, but I don't, you know, you don't get as much swing in the false, but I'm more confident with that. So I went with the confidence. And so that requires you to be able to get your hands on. Thankfully, the rings were grippy because you know what it's like to work on slippery rings. It's just, it can be make things way more difficult. So I was able to get my grip on the rings and then get through them. I mean, I got through, I think through 13 of 15. And so, you know, obviously you always want to do a little better, you know, why couldn't I have just finished, you know,
right.
Because the scoring on that event was interesting because you would lose points for, I think it was 20 points per rep or something like that, would come off your score. And so somehow they worked that out. I mean, the math on that event was just confusing to me, just in terms of how they took it as a whole.
Right.
So then we went into, was it snatches, the obstacle first, and then around?
Around
buoy.
Yeah, so you ran over hopped over the log, ran around an obstacle, back over the log again, and then sprint to the end.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was fun. Enjoyed that. And we did I think the muscle ups probably took it out of me a little bit for the snatches. And so I wasn't able to finish those, and then did finish the row, the last one. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I liked hopping over the log too. That was fun.
Yeah. That is a cool implement for sure. I want to hear about rinse and repeat. So this is the one that was in the aquatic arena and what's it called? A natatorium or something like that. So it was in the university's facility, and it was a 50-yard swim. So down and back across the pool, and then skier cows with it, you going every 2 minutes and the cows increasing until you fail for most of the older masters of visions, because everybody did the exact same workout from the individuals all the way up through the 65 plus, including the teens. So every single person did the same workout, which is really cool. But what it means is it's a shorter workout for the older age groupers. How far did you get into this one?
I think rounds wise, I was working on the
14.
So you start at 8 calories.
Yep. It's 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. I'm going to say you're somewhere in that range.
I was working on the 16 at that point.
So I think you got capped at the 16.
Sorry?
I think you got capped at the 16, and there's only one guy who made the 18.
Yes. Yes. And John, next to me, John Mariotti, was, he said, Ken, if you had the flip turn, you would have been with me. and I said, well, yeah, I really wrestled with that because I've done flip turns before, but I'm not expert at it. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
So it's true. I should have interjected those, but I was kind of thinking that I would need the breath at that point.
Right. That's the trade-off. It's definitely faster, but you're holding your breath for significantly longer. And if you're not super dialed in with them, it's like if you don't get a good push or you're too deep or too shallow or whatever, there's a lot that can go wrong with those.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it was a compromise on my part, or a decision. It was a conscious decision to do that. But, you know, in retrospect, I guess I would just get more practiced at the flip turn. And then it was a great event. There's all kinds of speculation as to what that other piece of it would have been going to be, you know, because you know, in the past they'd done muscle ups and things like that. I didn't think they'd do that again, but with all the wet. But the ski erg was perfect. I thought that was I thought it was well programmed. It was motivation to keep to get those next calories.
Yeah.
And so I think I ended up at, I don't know, 14 calories or 13 or 14, something like that on that last one. And so dang, I needed that one more, you know, this couple more good pulls
to earn another 2 minutes of suffering.
Yeah. So I think I placed third in that one. So I enjoyed that event, enjoyed that one. And it didn't pull my legs. My legs weren't, you know, it was good for my legs at that point.
Yeah. So final question for you. So if somebody's listening and, you know, they're, let's say they're a master's athlete, there's someone who
cares about their, you know, competitive fitness and they want to do the best they can in like their sport, right? But at the same time, like you were saying, like you don't want to sacrifice it to, you know, be at the detriment of their health or their vitality by, you know, chasing sports performance. In your experience, like how do you think people can best balance those two things?
Well, first of all, I think keeping your priorities in mind, you know, at, you get to this end of life and you want those to be, you know, you living in decrepitude, you know, is it worth wrecking yourself? And so on the other end is being wise and listening to advice, you know, following the advice that is out there already, people who have experience. I think I have prioritized movement. And so this is one of the things I've been told by other, by coaches. My coach, he says, you really move well out there. Now we need to work on the other, you know, work on the stamina, the capacity, the work capacity. And you know that of me too. And so you can't let the mobility piece go. You can't work, let the like time on crossover symmetry kind of thing go. You just got to stay with it, be consistent, and then look for opportunity. It's hard to answer that this in 30 seconds, but consistency, I think, has been a strength for me. Just trusting the process, incremental process. And listening to other people. I've always learned from mentors. And so I've looked for mentors in my life. And so working with you, Ben, was very beneficial. You know, I was searching for ways to, okay, how do I improve in these weak areas while still keeping the stronger areas up and things like that. And so I don't know if that answers, that's only begins to answer the question. So.
Yeah, that's the thing is these aren't easy questions to answer. They're stuff that have a lot of layers to them. So no, I think your insights are super helpful and there's stuff that, you know, just your perspective, I think a lot of people are going to relate to and find a lot of value in. So I appreciate you jumping on today, Ken.
Are you welcome? In some ways you got to trust that you're maybe not at the limits that you think you are and go for it because you don't know how far you can go. So
we'll leave it there.
All right. Good to see you, Ben. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Good to see you too, Ken.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Hey, it's Ben again. Thanks for listening today. To be completely honest, it's been really rewarding to have people who listen to the show regularly reach out to me, whether they have a question about training or just to say, hey. So if you haven't done that yet, you do it. I'm pretty good about getting back to people, and you can feel free to email me, ben@sorefitness.com, or message me on Instagram @sorefitness. And graciously, I've had some people reach out to me and ask how they can support the show. Number one way that you can support the show if you are a regular listener is just by rating the show. Most apps have a platform where you can actually rate it, and on Apple Podcasts, you can write a review as well. This is super helpful in having other coaches and athletes find the podcast, but also just having it grow and for me to continue to want to put out more and more content. Also, I'm going to be posting more full episodes of The Fitness Movement to our YouTube channel. So if you're someone who actually enjoys seeing my face when I talk, you can head over to YouTube and subscribe if you please. And if you're someone who is watching on YouTube, you have the ability to like our videos, but then you can also comment on the video if you have questions about the episode or if you want to suggest a topic for a future episode. And lastly, if you're someone who really does value what we're putting out, I would encourage you to hire a coach. For me, coaching is the bulk of my job and it's what I believe I do best. So if you're an athlete or a coach looking to up your fitness game, be sure to reach out. You can message me on Instagram @ZorFitness or email me ben@ZorFitness.com. Thanks again for listening today. And as always, stay the course.